Hello and welcome to the first episode of Corner of the Sky, a musical theater podcast that's about a different musical every episode. Our premiere is about, what else? The longest running Broadway show of all time, Phantom of the Opera. An epic show of art, obsession, and violence. Phantom of the Opera centers around a rising star soprano, Christine Daae, and a mysterious musical genius known only as the Opera Ghost in 1905 Paris. The Phantom becomes obsessed with Christine, mentoring her singing ability and drawing her into his underground lair. However, Christine falls in love with her childhood friend Rao, and their engagement, as well as the new opera house owner's refusal to meet the Phantom's demands, sent him on a violent mission of revenge. Now about spoilers today, this episode does reveal more details about various characters and their backstories, but the ending of the show is not discussed. My name is Quinn Rose, and my guest today is student and singer Caroline Rossum, who is also a good friend and the president of our show choir. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Phantom of the Opera. Hello, everybody. I'm here today with my friend Caroline.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about
The Phantom of the Opera.
Woo!
Dun, 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 dun. I don't know. I'm sorry. I felt like it was necessary.
Of course it's necessary. It's always necessary.
Thank you.
So why did you want to talk about this musical today?
I feel like my understanding of this musical has changed a lot as I've grown up. Or I first saw the movie version as a middle schooler, and I was just blown away by the fact that there was both organ and an electric guitar in a musical. Like, I freaked out. It was so cool. And then my understanding of the social stuff in the musical really grew throughout high school and college, so it went from being my all-time favorite musical, favorite everything ever, I loved it so much, to a musical where I had a lot of feelings about.
I also think I saw this movie, this show as a movie for the first time in middle school, and my best friend all through middle school and high school and today, one of her favorite movies of all time is Phantom of the Opera. Closely related to the fact that her favorite actor of all time is Gerard Butler, who played the Phantom in the movie. And so I have seen this movie several times, and I also got to see it on Broadway a couple years ago, which was really cool. And it's the longest running show on Broadway ever, and even though it's like very much a cliche and kind of the quintessential, one of the quintessential shows to make fun of, it also, like, seeing it, I could understand why it's the longest running show on Broadway. It was very good and a cool performance.
It's a spectacle.
That is a good word for it. It is spectacular, spectacular. So to talk about a little bit of the meat of the show, because you kind of alluded to some problematic aspects of it. But first, just give me an idea of the overall themes of what's going on.
So there's a lot of kidnapping that goes on. Maybe I won't start with that one. So it's this about this idea that music is like the epitome of art, and there's something very special about the people who can make music, and they can be sort of idolized in this way by creepy people who live in a sewer.
Details. Details, details.
Oh, but I think it's like a fetishization of art. Is that a word?
I think so.
Okay. It's a fetishization of art. It sounds like it's not a word.
I think it is.
Okay.
And if not, it is now. No, I think that is a very good way to put it, though, because kind of the whole idea is that the Phantom is obsessed with Christine because she can sing well, to the point where he kidnaps her into his creepy lair. And that's like very much this intense fascination with music, even though he doesn't know anything about her and she really doesn't know anything about him, but she trusts him because he can sing well, which is not a good strategy at all.
No, terrible.
Yeah, if a voice from out the walls tells you to follow them somewhere, don't
walk into any mirrors. But it also has a lot to do with like the themes of innocence, where people are very drawn to Christine because she seems like this innocent young creature, and that's like very attractive to people like the Phantom, but also to Raoul, who is her real actual lover that she falls in love with, and there's some sort of reciprocity going on there, which is nice because the Phantom relationship isn't like that at all. But it's also still a little creepy, where they have this beautiful song that they sing, and like, I listen to the words as a middle schooler, and I'm like, this is the most pure form of love, and I'm going to sing this at my wedding, and I have to marry a tenor, so that eliminates a lot of people. But I remember thinking, like, this is just the most glorious thing, but the song is also very much, like, love is everything, and they're like, say you love me every waking moment. Like, that's a lot. She's like, that's all I ask of you. And I'm like, you're asking a lot, hun.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a thing that shows up in pop culture over and over again is, well, I mean, the romanticization of romance and the idea that romantic love is the goal of everyone and is the most pure form of love.
But it's also a relationship where Raoul is very like, I'll protect you. I'm here to guard you and to guide you. Which are two separate things.
I mean, okay.
Like, he does a lot, you know, and he thinks he has to do a lot. And Christine's just like, I'm just going to sit here, look pretty, and you have to tell me you love me all the time.
This is another one of those shows that you have, like, the main female character who has a friend who has her life significantly more together / is a better character. Looking at you, Les Mis.
Who also happens to be an alto. Is there a pattern here?
Are altos better than sopranos? Stay tuned.
Hey. let's just take this down a peg here.
If you can't tell, Caroline's a soprano and I'm an alto. I'm just saying, I'm the friend who, actually has her life together. Although, I die, so... Okay, I'm gonna stop talking about Les Mis. So, back to the camera. Yeah, because Christine is, okay, so her dad tells her that there's going to be an angel of music, and so she trusts this mysterious voice and follows him into his basement lair, and also is just does not make smart decisions about her relationships and trying to keep her fiancé alive, because she also, like, fails to mention that she has some kind of weird relationship with this old dude. There's a lot going on there. And meanwhile, she has this friend who's like, what are you doing?
Just, you know, that the angel of music is, like, not real, right? Like, this is the thing that your dad said to help you feel better. And Christine's like, no, he's real. I hear him. He sings to me every night in my sleep. And she's like, no.
I'm amazed that Fred did not stage an intervention at a much earlier point in the show. Like, before the show should have even started, she'd been like, okay, we gotta talk about this.
Oh, yeah. Meg.
Oh, Meg. I couldn't remember her name, which is why I didn't say it. Is her name Meg?
Yeah, her name is Meg.
It's a good name.
Meg Giry.
Wow, you're on it.
I like saying French words. They sound pretty in French.
So yeah, so I think that although this is not the main theme of the show, that listen to your friends is a good message to take away from this.
And the strength of female relationships, because that female friendship is the only really healthy relationship in the show.
Yeah. I mean, we have Christine and her two fellas, and then Meg, and then
Meg's mom also.
Yes.
She's looking out for her girls, for her ballet dancers. She's the ballet teacher, I believe. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of, like, exploitation going on there because Meg's mom is the one that first brought the Phantom there in the first place, and she's supposed to be, like, protecting these girls, but she's not because she also felt bad for the Phantom in the first place.
Yeah, she many, many years ago rescued the Phantom, whose name is Eric, I guess. But from the circus freak show that he was trapped in. And then, instead of integrating him into society, put him in a basement. I'm not really...
Is that better?
Like, I'm not really sure exactly the decision rationale behind this. Yeah, and then he just, like, lives in the opera house and is the opera ghost. And just blackmails a lot of people / kills them.
And gets a lot of money. It's unclear what he uses it for. But he's always forcing people to bribe him and keep one particular opera box out for him to see. Does he ever sit in there? Is that ever established?
I'm not sure if it's established she ever actually uses it. I see.
That's a waste.
I feel like when I visualize the Phantom, I often visualize Batman.
Do go on.
Because they are both creepy, often kind of old dudes who are super overdramatic, and also flounce around in the shadows and like just melt away into the night. Even though you're like, this is unnecessary. You could just walk away like a person. Also, they look really weird from close up.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they look cool and dramatic from far away.
Remarkably wealthy. Covers yeah. part of their face.
Oh yeah, and on the point of like what he does with that money, have you seen his basement lair? That is a sweet setup. That yeah. requires some cash to get funded.
Absolutely. With the mannequin of Christine, which is weird.
Very weird. Also a brief note about his underground lair, because this is something that I find very funny. So in the movie, there is a scene and when they're singing Phantom of the Opera, and it's very dramatic, and he's bringing Christine into his lair for the first time, and at some point, he puts her on a horse, this big white horse, and they're walking underground with this horse. And I kid you not, there is never any explanation offered as to where this horse came from, how it got into this basement, and why the Phantom has this horse. But one time in high school, I read the book, Phantom of the Opera, that the show is based on, which is very different, by the way. And there's a line that explains it. There's this random throwaway line. They're like, hey, you know those horses we have for the second act of this show? They're going missing. And I, because this is something my friend and I had talked about for a while, is why do they never explain how this horse gets here? It's just in the one scene, too, and then it's just for dramatic effect. They totally explain it in the book.
That's hilarious.
Not that musicals always have, you know, great realism, but it just didn't make any sense.
Well, what about, like, all of the candles on the boat, or, like, the mysterious fog that always seems to appear right when they're first entering the Phantom's lair? Is there an explanation for that? Why all of a sudden the climate in the sewers has shifted so?
I mean,
there's a lot of fog.
They make fog machines.
In the opera?
Can you imagine? What I really want to see is, like, one of the operas that they were putting on in that opera house, but with, like, a fifth grade level of production, which just, like, someone's crappy fog machine. I mean, I'm sure this has happened plenty of times with actual productions of Phantom of the Opera, but
I'm sure. What I really hope is, have you ever seen those fog machines that people have out on Halloween that make fog bubbles?
What?
Those are a thing, and I think that they would work very well for this particular scene.
We had a fog machine for my Halloween parties when I was a kid.
That's super cool.
I know. We were the coolest. Okay, pulling away from the fog. Just that Phantom. I don't know what he's up to. He spends all this time. He writes music, doesn't he? He writes music. He sings to Christine through walls, and he decks out his crib. He's like, hey, MTV, welcome to my crib. So let's talk about Raoul for a little bit. Is it Raoul?
I don't know. They tend to say Raoul.
Yeah, I guess. So he is Christine's fiancé. They established that they were friends as children.
Mm-hmm. So why Christine, a violin player's daughter, was hanging out with the Vicomte, which I don't even know what that is. I'm not very familiar with royal titles, but it's some kind of count. And that seems relatively important, so again, I have no idea how they used to hang out, but
didn't they imply that they were, like, on a beach together as children?
Yes.
Yeah.
But
that, again, don't know why or how. Also, how the heck they remember each other. I don't even remember some people I went to high school with. But they both recognize each other immediately, and they're like, oh, there's that kid that I liked when I was 7.
And then they both have these very brooding moments about it, like, I knew him as soon as I saw him, but I don't know if he knows me, or, like, what do I do? And then he just shows up, and he's like, hey.
Hey, girl. Slide into your DMs. Yeah, and then he doesn't have much of a character in the show. He's just kind of, he's supposed to be, you know, nice guy Raoul.
The male character that's not the Phantom, so you have some hope for the men in this world.
Yeah, he's just, you know, a guy that likes Christine and is gonna marry her, and then the Phantom tries to kill him.
Hate it when that happens, you know?
You know, you just trying to get married to your childhood friend, and then your creepy sugar daddy shows up and tries to get rid of him.
But the Phantom does it in such a dramatic way, too. So after Christine and Raoul have their beautiful duet that's like, all I ask of you is just love me and everything, which is, again, creepy, but it's still very beautiful. It's a beautiful song. And then the Phantom comes on screen just like yells like, you will curse the day you did not do. So he just busts on the scene super dramatically, and it's really cool and exciting.
I'm Batman. Sorry, I wasn't even thinking about how the Phantom reminds me of Batman before we started recording, but now I can't stop thinking about it.
I can't stop thinking about it either, honestly. It's just the connection has forever been made in my head, and...
Isn't in the movie, in that scene, he's literally hiding behind something on the same rooftop?
Yes, he is.
Which is just so funny.
Just, like, watching.
Always watching. I see you. Yeah. They're just trying to have their lovely duet. He's not having it.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah. In the book, which I don't remember a lot about, so I'm not going to reference much after this, but I do remember how there was a lot more going on, and also, Raoul had to go through this maze / torture chamber at the end, where...
That does happen in the...
Yeah, well,
and in the movie.
There was another character there called who is the Persian. This character is not in the show, but was a very main, like, a large character in the book, who was with Raoul the entire time at the end that they're going through this. And there was all this stuff going on, and then I don't remember what happens to the Persian at the end. It is funny how they completely retcon this character entirely out of existence.
That's always so fascinating to me when different adaptations of a story just, like, do away with a major plot point or major character. Like, oh, it's not important anymore.
We don't need this guy.
It would be the Persian, too.
Yeah, I don't think he had a real name. I'm gonna check this right away, but that's, like, what I remember them calling him.
I mean, I hate to say it seems like authentic 19th century Paris, but...
Yeah, he's actually supposed to be the Phantom's friend, but he's like, wow, the Phantom's such a... And so he's helping out Raoul at the end.
How sweet.
Yep.
Speaking of extraneous male characters, can we take a second to talk about the two owners of the opera house? Because I think they might be my favorites.
They're definitely the comedy relief of the show, and because they're ridiculous.
They're just so ridiculous, and they don't know what's going on, and they're like, oh, we're not going to give any money to this opera ghost that supposedly haunted this opera for generations upon generations, or really a few years, but, you know, forever. And then they're like, why do all these terrible things keep happening? It's definitely not the opera ghost, is it?
Didn't they used to own a cheese factory, is the...
No.
Their background?
Scrap metal. They were very clear that it is not junk. At least that's what it is in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know where I got cheese from. Is this something else?
I sincerely hope so. I would really enjoy watching a musical put on by people who owned a cheese factory. So I assume that people in the Phantom universe would as well.
I'll look into this. Their entire purpose is to just instigate all of the problems in this show by not following any of his demands. And it wasn't even like, no, we will stand up for ourselves, we will not be bullied by this opera ghost. They're like, what the heck is this? This is not a real thing. and everyone there is being, you know, super dramatic and is like, do not anger the ghost. And they're like, whatever.
Like, what ghost? And literally their entire staff is like, the opera ghost, he's real, he is killing people, he does kill people. And they're like, oh, it's pretty weird that that lighting dude just got, you know, hung in that terrible accident that was definitely an accident.
Also, are there no, like, health inspectors in opera houses?
Workplace safety is very important.
Yeah, they do definitely not pass OSHA standards right here. It should not be that easy to, make that many deaths look like accidents in an opera house. There are not proper safety precautions in these places. How many people does he actually kill over the course of this show?
There's the, what is his name? Joseph something. The lighting dude that gets, mm-hmm. or the curtain dude. Tech, you know.
As someone who cares about tech?
As someone who acted in high school, we would all just be like, ah, the techies.
It's not like they make the show run or anything. Yeah, and then he knocks the chandelier down, which is very...
That's pretty dangerous as dramatic. Well.
Probably hurts a lot of people.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But it looked cool.
I know. I would say I was talking about earlier about seeing the show on Broadway, and the chandelier is really genuinely what makes this show, because there's an opening scene it's like a flash forward scene, and everything is very dark and quiet and dismal, and then the actual, like, dramatic opening scene starts, and it starts like this. Da 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 da. No warning whatsoever. That organ hits, the chandelier, which has been, like, lying down broken on the ground, lights up, swings into the air into place, the curtains open, the lights shine. It is the most sudden, beautiful start to a scene I have ever seen. I was just blown away by this. And the chandelier is just there for the whole time. Until the Phantom is like, no! but it's gorgeous. Yeah. So
it's phenomenal. I didn't see it on Broadway, but I saw a touring production when it came here, and I remember thinking the same thing, like, this is just so huge. Like, the spectacle that the show puts on is so huge, and if you're a person that enjoys theater and is choosing, like, which shows to spend your money on, I'd say absolutely Phantom of the Opera. Just seeing it put on by a group of professionals is, like, otherworldly. I can imagine this show would be very difficult for, like, a high school group to do, because there's so much technical knowledge that goes into it. But if it's done well, like, it's a spectacle.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of shows that are very intentionally character-driven, and very much, I think, emotional, personal stories. And it's not that Phantom doesn't have, you know, character arcs and personal stories, but it is very much more focused on the overall spectacle of the thing.
It's huge.
Yeah. It's a good old Andrew Lloyd Webber original right here. Coming in with the dramatic organ.
That ALW. Do people call him that? I don't think they do.
I don't think so.
They do now.
We could call him AL Dubs.
AL Dubs.
He has three shows on Broadway right now. A lot of shows on Broadway, because Phantom's still on. It's going to be on forever.
Forever.
And then School of Rock and Cats just opened again this year.
Did it?
It did. Are you aware that Cats was revived?
No, I think I remember somebody mentioning that to me.
I remember when this news came out, someone was like, Cats is coming back. And someone just went, why?
That may have been me.
It really may have been. this episode is not about Cats.
Yeah, no hard feelings towards Cats. I'm just a dog person. That's just who I am.
Oh. they should make a musical called Dogs. They have Dog Fight.
That's not about dogs.
I know it's not about dogs. Cats isn't really about cats either. It's kind of just about being weird.
But, like, they're cats.
They are cats. That is true.
But anyways.
We digress.
Back to AL Dubs for a second, because I just want to voice that I think it's super creepy that he gave the role of Christine to Sarah Brightman. Like, that's weird.
Would you like to elaborate on why this is weird?
Yeah, because they were married!
Yeah.
That's weird! I don't know. I mean, if I were a loving husband, which I probably will never be, but if I were, I don't think I'd want to put my wife in a situation where she is being sexually harassed by, like, multiple men at the same time, and, like, people watch it and love it and think that it's romantic.
I mean, it is acting. So, there is that part.
Yes, it's acting, but, I mean, wouldn't you feel a little bit uncomfortable if that was your significant other up there?
Yeah.
I would.
There's a lot of really, really problematic things about Andrew Lloyd Webber, which we're not going to get too far into on this, but...
We don't have forever.
Yeah, that's a whole podcast, honestly. suffice it to say that, like, he's done many problematic things, and there are a lot of people who have worked with him who have a lot of problems with him, but he has also written some of the most successful musicals of all time, which... is a fun dichotomy to have in the theater.
Isn't that interesting how somebody who writes such successful musicals that are so adored is so creepy? Is that mirroring the Phantom of the Opera? What if Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote himself as the Phantom of the Opera?
Ooh, mystery uncovered. We're onto something here. You heard it here first. The Phantom of the Opera is a documentary about Andrew Lloyd Webber's life.
Called it.
Pulling it back, though, let's talk about the music.
Let's talk about the music, because the music is what really made me fall in love with this show. I think it is just so phenomenally beautiful. There are so many very, like, the themes of this show, like, the musical themes of this show, they're so iconic and so catchy. Like, that organ at the beginning, like, you hear that, and you're like, this is the Phantom of the Opera, man.
No, it's so true, and I do think that Phantom of the Opera, specifically that organ riff, is one of the most recognizable things in musical theater. But then as well, there's Masquerade, which is also a really popular and beautiful song, which we actually did in our show choir this semester, which was fun.
It was fun. It's complex.
Yeah, Caroline did the solo.
I did, which apparently in the movie version, the Christine and Raoul solos are spoken. Quinn just showed this to me a few minutes ago, and I was distressed.
Yeah, so in the show, there's this part in the middle of Masquerade where it cuts to Christine and Rao, and they have gotten engaged, but it's a secret, and they're kind of arguing about it, but of course they're singing it, because it's a song, and
like, that's what you do in musicals, you sing them. You sing the things.
You sing your conversations. But in the movie version, because movie adaptations of musicals do tend to have a lot less singing, especially in conversational parts, the music is still happening in the background, but they're having this conversation spoken, and it's off the timing of what it's supposed to be, and it just makes me so uncomfortable. It sounds wrong.
It's weird. But when it's sung, I think it's quite pretty.
It is quite pretty. It was very pretty when you sung it.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah, we did Masquerade, which is, fun fact, a hard song. Who knew?
Surprising to everyone.
Yeah. It was really cool. And I think that's of whenever this show is staged is like definitely one of the coolest stagings because you have the whole ensemble out there singing and they have to have really tight choreography and everyone's wearing masks and it's all dramatic.
It's very cool. We had some really exciting fan choreo that we did as well. And it's just so interesting to see all that movement on stage that's so in sync. Like whenever you see it performed. Now, I'm not saying that our show choir necessarily did it that in sync. We had one fan be dropped. It was really funny. Poor Jesse had to crawl to get his fan back, but...
That is maybe one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a concert recording, though, is just drops the fan on the ground.
Oh, it was great. I mean, we're not Broadway.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite songs from the show, though, is The Point of No Return, because it is so dramatic, because... back to the Phantom being, like, very overdramatic. He's literally saying, this is the point of no return. Like, we can never come back from here.
This takes place near the end of the musical where the Phantom is getting ready to put on his opera because that's his condition for having the world go on as it ought to. And Christine is going to be the star in it, and she is very, very concerned about that, understandably. And he's saying, no, you have to do this. This is the point of no return. And so it's them two singing back and forth. It's very intense.
Yeah. This song just strikes me, one, because it is so fun to listen to and to see. And also it's because it's like, really, this is a very arbitrary deadline you're putting on this person. Because he's singing about how it's the point of no return, but it's like, it doesn't have to be. Like, this is 100% you just imposing things on other people. And you're saying it like this is universal law that someone else has decided. Like, you don't own her. I know you're trying really hard, but you don't.
But that really speaks to the Phantom's character. I mean, he's a very interesting character, I think, because he's this person that's been so beaten down by all of society, but also has this, like, huge need for power. And it doesn't seem to always be for punishing people, because he does seem like he's truly in love with making art in the process of creating this opera and making this musical. But, I mean, he clearly has some issues in his execution. But he's an interesting villain because while he's bad, he's not entirely bad. There's a little bit of complexity to him.
Mm-hmm. I think the show does a good job of making it clear that the reason why he's doing bad things is because he's a very broken person. Which doesn't excuse bad things, but it does give you a better sense of where he's coming from and makes the character more interesting. Like was mentioned before, I mean, he was born horribly disfigured, which is why he wears a mask, and why, because at the time everything was horrible, he had been locked in to be a freak show in a circus, which is of course terrible. And so when Meg's mom, like as a teenager, steals him away from here, he is very bitter and angry, and because he's not reintegrated into society at any point, never deals with anything that happened to him and just kind of like closes it on himself until he has no sense of how people are supposed to treat each other.
It's also interesting because I feel like the plot of the story doesn't really go into Meg's mom and her background that much. I mean, maybe the book is different. I haven't read the book, but they don't really fully explain why she did what she did, other than the fact that she feels bad for him. But Meg's mom is like the example of the worst social service in the world. She takes this poor boy out of this freak show and sticks him in the sewers of Paris. That's not any better. It seems worse. It really does. And she says, like, she's trying to give him this outlet to make beautiful art because she recognizes that he's very talented. So she brings him into the real world, but she doesn't do anything for him. And it makes sense in a way, like, where he goes and why he's so attracted to Christine, because she's this young, impressionable girl with amazing talent, and he just, all he wants is to have his art be seen. So it's possible that it didn't start, a strange attraction or whatever, didn't start in this super creepy way, and it just became super creepy.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it's very interesting to me that they don't explain what Meg's mom was thinking going in and taking this horribly disfigured genius and not helping him integrate or make art, just kind of bringing him out there and being like, okay, write your musicals now.
Mm-hmm. I do think they talk more about this in the book, but I don't remember enough to speak about it. And even though I can bring in stuff from the book, that doesn't affect the show, because the show has to be, you know, a standalone thing. So plot holes in the musical are just plot holes regardless of what the book says.
Very good point. Yeah, I would be interested to learn more about why Meg's mom thought that this was a good idea to bring this dude out here and then not have him do anything. Like, what did you expect he would do? What was she going for there?
And the point when he starts extorting the opera house and making all these demands, and she's just like, this is fine.
Do you feel no responsibility? Because, like, you should.
You did kind of cause this. At any rate, it does end up okay. It ends up in a way that makes no sense whatsoever. Literally at the end, the fam just changes his mind. He's just like, no. Just kidding. You can actually just go get married to Rao and I won't bother you anymore.
And they live happily ever after. Apparently there's a sequel. I refuse to listen to it.
There's a sequel?
Love Never Dies.
What?
Yeah.
I bet it does.
Spoiler alert. Love dies.
Like, with a title like that, I'm pretty sure that gets disproven.
I just wholeheartedly refuse because I have so many feelings about Phantom of the Opera, but I do truly just love the music, and I think that it ends the way that it ends, and there doesn't need to be any more, and there shouldn't be any more.
Yeah, not everything needs a sequel at every movie studio. I did want to end our main discussion about this show, going back to what you started this conversation with, which is the whole concept of liking this show and then becoming socially aware and then finding it more problematic. So could you give me a little more detail on this arc?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing to think about because I fell in love with this show solely for the music and really didn't have any sort of understanding about what the relationships in this show sort of meant. Because when you're in middle school, you like things like Twilight, and you don't really think about how relationships should be healthy, which is not good. That is not a good thing. But that is how middle school, I guess, just was for me and is for a lot of people who consume media. You just don't think about things in this deeper sense. You take them at face value and you're like, wow, people just love each other so much. Isn't that wonderful? No, it's not wonderful. It's very unhealthy. And so learning about things like what makes a relationship unhealthy, unbalanced, and why it's not like, you don't need just love. All you need is love and also other stuff.
So just not all you, all you need is not just love.
All you need is not just love.
That would be a much less catchy song.
Yeah.
All you need is not just love.
I am neither Lennon nor McCartney. But the point being that I started out in my relationship with this show just loving everything that it stood for because I love the music and I loved the idea of loving someone so much that they are all you need and want, and no, that's just not a good idea. So going through high school and college and learning, you know, like what feminism is and what Tumblr is, it taught me a lot about how to look at other relationships critically and think about what's unhealthy and just kind of feel bad for female protagonists in media generally because they're not often treated well. And media as a whole is, like, sort of getting better in some sense. In some sense. I'm sure a lot of people want to argue with me on that. Is there a comment section for this podcast?
Just my Twitter.
Oh, boy. I should make a Twitter. I'm curious to see what people have to say about that. But anyways, so in my journey with this musical, I learned to look at other relationships critically and see what's unhealthy and then appreciate what makes a good relationship more. So I ended up learning a lot from Phantom of the Opera. Nothing that was taught by Phantom of the Opera, but I learned a lot nonetheless, which I think is really valuable in a sense. And just, like, the music is great. I'm a soprano, so I'm really happy when sopranos have good songs and cool high notes. I just really like that.
Yeah, and I think you made a really good point about how experiencing this as a young person, you just totally take everything at face value. I think that this show in particular doesn't... There's some pieces of media that portray unhealthy relationships and make it clear that they are unhealthy and they are not to be desired. And still sometimes, when you're young, you take those at face value. I think that this show definitely positions the Phantom as the antagonist and is, you know, someone who is doing bad things, but doesn't necessarily place, like, the way that he thinks about Christine and treats Christine as, like, the worst thing that he's doing. It's more about, like, oh, also he kills people and that's really bad. So the amount that this show works in context, I think, is really debatable. I think it does require people critically thinking about the relationships in the show, most markedly between Christine and the Phantom, which is obviously, like, super unhealthy, and also to a point, just this, like, very stereotypically Hollywood-style romanticized version of what romantic love is between Christine and Raoul, which is just, you know, that's something in a lot of work, but it's something that's important to think about, and we can love a work of art and also recognize that maybe it doesn't do the best job of presenting that relationship in context.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that's all of our main conversation today, and now we come to the lightning round.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Favorite song in the show?
Think of Me. Wait. No. Music of the Night. No. Most of them. Most of the songs. I love them all in such different ways. It's so hard to pick.
You're bad at lightning rounds.
I know I'm bad at lightning rounds. I told you going into this I was going to be bad at the lightning rounds, and I thought about it for like an hour, and I still don't know.
Favorite line?
I think if I had to pick, I would pick in the scene where the two opera house owners are talking to Raoul, and he's saying, you didn't write this letter? And they're like, oh, and what is it that we're meant to have wrote? And then one of them just goes, written. I really enjoy that, but small grammatical correction. I just think it's really funny.
That's a good bit, yeah. Your favorite character?
Christine, in all of all that she is. Because she's a soprano, and I love sopranos.
She does have some of the most beautiful solos in all of Broadway history.
Yeah, she does, because she's great.
Sing for me. Sing for me! She's singing, goddammit, stop.
She's just doing her best, okay?
Who would you recommend this show to?
In some sense, middle schoolers are people who have a strong affinity for fandoms, because I feel like if you're a fandom person, then you have that sort of addictive personality that this show just pulls you in and really entrances you, and you get super into it, because that's what it did to me. I was just like, oh my god, this is musical theater. This is wild. But on a deeper level, and on a level where you can critically think about all the pieces, I do feel like it's interesting and important for young women to watch.
Yeah, cool.
And I'd really recommend it to most people because it's just great.
It is. It's a good show. Music is great.
It's just so good.
And if you could combine this musical with any other show, which would you pick and why?
Cats.
Any explanation, or just because it'd be funny?
Just because it would be really funny.
I'm just picturing the characters from Cats singing Phantom of the Opera.
That's exactly what I want you to picture. Okay. That's my vision.
Good. Good. I like this. Right. Thanks for talking to me about Phantom of the Opera.
Thank you for allowing me to do this. This has been wonderful.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
Thank you all for listening today. You can find us various places online, like theincomparable.com/COTS, at COTS Podcast on Twitter, or in Apple Podcast, where you can leave us a review. Please leave us a review. It's all I ask of you.